Seekers, Mike Malloy here on Nova M Radio Network. It's 7 past the hour. Once again, today was one of those days. It just doesn't stop. I don't think when I can't remember when I've had a weirder day. I finally had to get up off the couch at 3 o'clock this afternoon and take Molly to do two different playgrounds just to get the hell away from these hearings. Oh, man, it just, it was just bizarre. And all I could think of, a new phrase from congressional hearings into Republican criminality just stood out today from this Kyle Sampson freak. And wasn't he a piece of work? Oh, my God. When he first walked in there at 10 o'clock this morning to be sworn in, and yeah, I was watching it then, I just saw, oh, my God. But he introduced a new catchphrase, as far as I'm concerned, into the lexicon of witnesses who are being grilled by House or Senate committees into the reality, or about the reality of Republican criminality. And the phrase that Kyle Sampson came up with, I remember in my mind. Now, he only used it about 10 times because this guy used I don't remember more times than Reagan used it when he was questioned after leaving office about Iran-Contra. I think Reagan said it something like 210 times in the space of a 3 or 4 hour long deposition. This Kyle Sampson, and as I watched him, I just kind of half interestedly or very little, I don't know, kind of like free form writing, jotted down some phrases of what he reminded me of. He's just a definition of a human cipher. Or a perfect bureaucrat. The other words I wrote down were bloodless, emotionless, pasty, asexual. I don't know where that one came from, but oh my God, he says he's married and has children. How? A whiner, banal, common, a perfect follower, a fall guy, lifeless. Whew. He epitomizes, as far as I'm concerned, everybody from the telephone service reps at Sears to, customer service reps to the person that you talk to try to find out why your electric bill has tripled.
You left off sweaty.
Sweat? Was he sweaty too?
Moist was the word that kept coming to my mind.
I just couldn't get
humid.
Moist. Oh, God. So while Karl Rove was prancing around at the press club dinner last night, did you see that video? I'm sure you have. Pretending to be a rapper and making just a total ass of himself and jokes about ripping the heads off of little animals while his boss made wisecracks about the botched firing of the 8 attorneys. I can't get my mind around that. There's David Gregory from NBC up on the stage with Karl Rove. And I'll tell you, a white man like Karl Rove should never even try to imitate or impersonate a rapper. I mean, that was just beyond embarrassing. That was mortifying to see this, another perfect cipher, another deadhead, deadhead, not Grateful Dead, you know what I mean, another just embarrassing white man. These people remind me of that movie, The Boys from Brazil. Just clone after clone after. They all look alike. Do you notice how Kyle Sampson looks just like Karl Rove, on and on. It's just like cookie cutter bureaucrats, pasty. Yeah. Ooh. I can't stand them. Anyway, while that was going, all that nonsense last night, apparently they didn't realize or don't care, and I think it's the latter, that there was a Senate hearing waiting for them when they woke up this morning. These people don't care. They don't care. They really, the hubris is still 17 feet thick around these people. You know, I got a link here to an article that says Bush's approval rating in New Hampshire, not exactly a bastion of liberalism, is below 20%. But they don't care. It matters not. So prancing around the stage, and NBC's David Gregory, shame on you, David. These are not your friends, David. It's one thing to be a suck-up when you're in the White House press room, but it's something else again, Mr. Gregory, to be jumping around on stage with Karl Rove. I don't know. So how serious was the hearing today? So serious that CNN's Larry King put the nonstop Anna Nicole coverage on hold to interview Arlen Specter and Charles Schumer about the testimony. Holy Toledo! That's how serious that was, huh? You know it's bad. When the Republicans, as they did today, dig around into the basement of arcane Senate rules and come up with some obscure procedural afterthought written down somewhere, sometime, in an attempt to shut down a committee hearing in midstream. I couldn't believe that. Samson, and we'll talk about that a little bit later tonight, too. Samson did the best he could, though, to cover a rapping Rove's flabby backside, but he couldn't protect Bush's Lito Tejano, who has changed his story more than Walter Mitty. I mean, this guy is just... put a fork in him. April 17th, you're going to show up? Nah, well, whatever. They don't get it. They just don't get it. That's why Bush is so upset. Bush, after 6 years of having Republicans in the House and the Senate, and for a couple of years there, Democrats in the Senate, under the firm hand of people like... what's his name? I even forget now. Who was the Senate Majority Leader, Minority Leader there for a while, Kathy? The guy from Dakota, North Dakota. Oh, my God, come on, help me out here. Yeah, Tom Daschle, thank you. Who is not a Democrat, he's just a wimp. But after 6 years of this, Bush really believes that a Congress that forces testimony or threatens to use subpoenas and may use them, that Congress is somehow being treasonous. He thinks that's treason because he's had 6 years of believing that the way the Congress of the United States works is to roll over and stick its legs in the air every time this crazy son of a bitch says that it's going to happen this way, it's going to happen that way. So it's amazing to watch the reaction, the official reaction. Now, when they put Bush back on his drugs and send him out to the White House press corps dinner or the whatever the hell it was, not White House press corps, but the... You know, he can make jokes about it. The press corps dinner to me is just, I don't know, it's just too obnoxious. I can't handle that. You know, people dying, the government being perverted and subverted by these thugs in the Bush crime family. The Constitution, the provisions for, the First Amendment, the Fifth Amendment, the Fourth Amendment, everything just being utterly destroyed, the right to a trial being destroyed, habeas corpus destroyed, and these sons of bitches can get up on a stage and joke around and act like it's just all a hoot. Hey, when we're at the press corps dinner, we're all friends. Really? What are you when you're not at the press corps dinner? So anyway, we're going to have extensive coverage of the hearings tonight, not to ignore the other news about the Saudis finger-wagging at Bush over Iraq, which we covered last night, or Bush's toddler temper tantrum over the Senate passage of his supplemental funding bill because it mandates troop withdrawal. We'll probably cover that tomorrow, and Dana Perino's outrageous comments about that as well. Speaking of Dana, we're going to announce our Dana Perino nickname winner. When? Tomorrow? And you can still send entries tonight to Malloy Producer at AOL.com if you want to win a Shut Up and Sing DVD sent to us by our good friend Daryl over in Alabama. We'll take entries up until midnight Eastern time tonight, and then we'll announce the winner tomorrow. So you got about 3 hours to enter. Put the word contest in the subject line and email it, not to me. Send it to Malloy Producer at AOL.com. All right, stick around. It's going to be an interesting ride tonight. We probably are not going to get to a lot of phone calls, so don't call in right now. Wait until we give you the thumbs up. I'm Mike Malloy. This is NoVem Radio Network.
Have a time. Can't touch this. Can't touch this.
I'm MC Rome.
Can't touch this.
He's in the jailhouse now.
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 I told him once or twice to quit playing cards and shooting dice. He's in the jailhouse now.
I mentioned early on that I recognize there are hurdles and we're going to achieve those hurdles. There's no doubt in my mind we will.
We used to steal, gamble, and rob. All he wants is the slickest.
He's going to what? Achieve those hurdles. Okay. All right, just a couple other things that were a little bit eye-catching, not the least bit pertinent to anything, I guess. Before we get to that sound from today that you may or may not have had a chance to hear, this, you can take it with as many grains of salt as you want. Kev in Apache Junction, Arizona, sent this to me. You might call it desperate Republican housewives. It says Republican presidential candidate John McCain, like the man he is trying to replace, is losing it, according to people who work with the Arizona senator. Like George W. Bush, not only is McCain in denial over the U.S. military disaster in Iraq, but McCain's wife, Cindy, has reportedly increasingly been in the company of a close and younger male friend. Laura Bush has also been relying on the personal support of a close male friend, a wealthy Texas businessman, according to our Washington, our well-placed Washington social sources. Oh, yeah. Well, why not? Sure. Regarding talk radio, as you all know, the state of Ohio went almost completely Democratic in the last election. But this is from talkingradio.blogspot.com, talkingradio.blogspot.com. Under the heading, As Ohio Goes, So Goes the Nation, it says, with the announcement today reported in Ohio Media Watch that WARFAM in Akron is going to flip from liberal talk to sports on Friday, there will now be no liberal talk station in the entire state of Ohio. And this happens less than 5 months after the Democrats dominated the election results, sweeping all statewide elections, including a U.S. Senate seat, the governorship, and most state and federal legislative positions. Shortly thereafter, Clear Channel Communications, which owns all these stations, started switching out liberal talk stations. The first to go was a station in Cincinnati, which flipped to non-political talk. A month later, another station, WTPG, flipped to conservative talk, even though Clear Channel was already operating a right-wing talk station in the Democratic-leaning Central Ohio town, whatever the hell that means. I guess it's Columbus. Now, just over 2 months later, Clear Channel has completed the trifecta by flipping from liberal talk to sports in Akron. Is it possible, the blogger writes, is it possible that a broadcasting company that gives more money to the Republican Party than any other broadcasting company, about 95% of Clear Channel's political donations go to Republican candidates, is it possible that Clear Channel is trying to influence future elections in the important swing state of Ohio? Clear Channel Cincinnati. This is the now, this is the part I like. Clear Channel Cincinnati Operation Manager Daryl Parks told the Cincinnati Post in December that liberal talk needed to be dropped from Cincinnati's airwaves because liberal talk was, quote, agenda-driven, end quote. Son of a bitch, really? Parks said, quote, it was a format that was set up not to entertain, but it seemed set up to get people elected, for lack of a better way to put it. There were good liberal shows, Parks added, but they need to start looking to more broad-based subjects than just harping on politics. Oh, sit down and shut up, Daryl Parks. Oh, my God, get this guy out of town. Can you imagine? We're carried on a lot of Clear Channel stations. I would imagine other Clear Channel managers who are aware of Daryl Parks' statement are just embarrassed. We are. We carried on a lot of Clear Channel stations. So are the Air America people. But this doofus, and then Talking Radio has his photograph. Woo! Talk about a used car salesman. Oh, my God. Anyway, the writer at talkingradio.blogspot.com adds this. To say that liberal talk is in free fall would be an understatement. In a little over a year, 24 stations that reached a potential audience of over 15 million radio listeners have dropped liberal talk as a format. Nine of these stations are owned by Clear Channel. However, in fairness to Clear Channel, they also own and operate 14 of the remaining 56 full-time liberal talk stations. Oh, well, you know the reason for it is because liberal talk, nobody wants to hear it, huh? Bush's approval ratings nationwide around 28 or 29%. In New Hampshire, they're below 20. People are sick of these filthy criminal Republicans. And yet, radio station managers and syndicators will say, well, there's no market for liberal talk. Yeah, okay.
Having a few friends over for a cocktail or two.
What the hell was that? We didn't get struck by lightning, did we?
Fat Charlie the Archangel sloped into the room.
Back in Iraq today, multiple suicide bombers struck in predominantly Shiite markets in Baghdad and in a town north of the capital. 104 civilians were killed today, scores wounded. Now, this was the day that the new U.S. ambassador to that sad country was sworn in, Ambassador Ryan Crocker, who, by the way, speaks fluent Arabic. Two of the suicide bombers struck a market in the Sha'ab neighborhood of northeastern Baghdad, killing 61, wounding 40. About the same time, three suicide car bombers attacked a market in the town of Khalis, north of Baghdad, killing 43 more, wounding 86. Khalis is in the volatile Diyala province, it says here, where fighting has been raging among Sunni insurgent Shiite militiamen and U.S. troops. At his swearing-in ceremony in the heavily fortified Green Zone, Crocker said he was taking over, quote, the most critical foreign policy mission, end quote, facing the U.S. Not really, but okay, what the hell? You guys want to play that game? Go ahead. Hours before his address, a bomb planted under a parked car tore through a Baghdad market in the mixed Al-Bay'a neighborhood, killing three, wounding 26. At the same time, a car bomb exploded near a Shiite mosque in the town of Mahmoudia, 20 miles south of Baghdad, killing six and wounding 19. You see, you know what I'm doing this with. Yeah. Taking up where his predecessor, Zalmay Khalilzad, left off, Crocker warned Shiite Prime Minister al-Maliki that his government, quote, must take all the necessary steps to unite the country, end quote. Crocker left no doubt of his commitment to the Bush administration's policy in Iraq, which is under attack by Congress. Crocker said, quote, President Bush's policy is the right one. There has been progress. There is also much more to be done. Bombs going off all over the place while this freak is saying this. And they just, I don't know, how do you do that? How do you do that? A couple hundred people wiped out as you're talking. And you say, well, you know, everything's going great. In the northwestern city of Tal Afar, when five mortar shells hit a Shiite district, three people wounded. The shelling came a day after Shiite militants and police went on a shooting rampage against Sunnis in the city, killing as many as 70, execution style. We mentioned this last night, dragging males between 15 and roughly 65 out into the street and murdering them. Those killings were triggered by twin truck bombings the previous day against Shias that killed 80 people and wounded 185. But everything's going great. And what did this crazed Republican presidential contender McCain say? Wolf, you're 3 months behind times. That's all bad news. Everything's good now. Hell, Petraeus goes out in his Humvee, unprotected, unarmored, nobody around him. We could walk through the neighborhoods in Baghdad outside the Green Zone. McCain is insane. Either that or he's totally unaware of what the truth is. And I don't see how that could be since he's made several trips to Iraq. He's a madman. He's absolutely insane. But, you know, so what? BuzzFlash had this out. The U.S. attorney scandal has struck a new victim, the American taxpayer. Here's what happened. A judge ruled yesterday that an epic blunder by Bush-appointed federal prosecutors in the largest tax prosecution ever means that the U.S. Treasury can't recoup at least $100 billion in restitution. This telecommunications entrepreneur and apparent tax thief, Walter Anderson, pled guilty to tax evasion. But U.S. District Judge Paul Friedman said the binding plea agreement listed the wrong statute. This problem could have been overcome had prosecutors not failed to include any discussion of probation, as is routine in such deals. Because of the technicality, the judge said, quote, I've come to the conclusion, very reluctantly, that I have no authority to order restitution. This is a very poorly drafted agreement, end quote. Now, the case was prosecuted by the office of the interim U.S. Attorney for D.C., Jeffrey Taylor. Taylor was appointed directly by Gonzalez without Senate confirmation in November under a provision of the USA Patriot Act that Congress has recently voted to reverse. Sure enough, Taylor came straight from the Bush administration. He served as counselor to Attorney Generals John Ashcroft and Gonzalez for 4 years prior to his selection. That sounds like Samson. Before that, he worked as an aide to Senator Orrin Hatch, where he actually participated in the writing of the Patriot Act. Jeffrey Taylor has also given hundreds of dollars to the RNC and to George W. Bush. As the acting U.S. Attorney for D.C., Taylor has the sole authority to enforce House or Senate subpoenas through citations for contempt of Congress. Even if Taylor actually chooses to prosecute an administration official for refusing to testify, which is very unlikely, could we trust him not to screw it up? My God. D.C.'s last U.S. attorney, Kenneth Weinstein, was not fired. He was promoted to Assistant Attorney General for National Security. So that's just one example. You know, the good attorneys who are out there smashing corruption, being Batman and Robin, all Republicans, just going after crime. They don't give a damn if it's Republican crime or Democrat crime, apparently. Those guys and gals get fired. But some twit like this Taylor freak who can't even draft an agreement? God. All right. We want to hear some of this. I just am incredulous at what I heard today and what I saw. And, of course, it didn't get much play on the nightly news, at least the two networks I watched. A couple of minutes in each network was not the lead story. ABC's lead story was tornadoes in the Midwest, and NBC's lead story was, I don't know, it's eminently forgettable, because I can't remember it. Patrick Leahy. Senator Leahy asked Kyle Sampson about an email regarding who in the White House approved the 8 firings. Was it Myers? Was it Bush? As would become typical during the hearings, Sampson had no memory of who decided which attorneys would be fired.
Now, this document contains Ms. Myers' response on November 15th to your email that day, and your reply to her. You ask, quote, who will determine whether this requires the president's attention? Is that correct?
Yes.
Did you get an answer to that question?
No.
Who decided?
I don't know.
Did the president review this plan for the removal and replacement of U.S. attorneys?
I personally don't know.
Do you know today either way?
I don't know.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay. Leahy then asked about a December 4th last email from Myers' deputy counsel inside the White House, William Kelly, which indicated that the White House had reviewed the recommendations on the firings and had signed off on the plan. So, did Sampson have any further communications with the White House after that email? Again, Sampson, well, you can hear what he says. He cited the Thanksgiving holiday as his excuse this time. I guess there's just too much tryptophan in those turkeys.
And the December 4 email from Mr. Kelly, which informed you the White House ledge and political and communications and signed off on the plan. Did you have further communications with the White House regarding the plan to remove and replace several U.S. attorneys?
I don't remember specifically. There was a Thanksgiving holiday in between there, and I just don't remember.
So you don't know whether you did or not?
I don't remember if I did or not.
Yeah, okay. Leahy then asked about an email Mr. Kelly sent to Kyle Sampson on the day the 7 attorneys were fired, stating that, quote, Carl would like to know some particulars, end quote. Incredibly, Sampson here first demurs on whether or not this was a reference to Carl Rove. Then he says he doesn't remember a portion of an email where Mr. Kelly was asked to forward something to Mr. Rove's deputy, Scott Jennings.
You received this email from Mr. Kelly on the day 7 of the U.S. attorneys were told to resign, asking you to talk to Scott Jennings about the particulars of Kevin Ryan's situation. He's one of the U.S. attorneys told that day to resign. And did Mr. Kelly write, quote, Carl would like to know some particulars as he fields these calls, close quote.
Senator, I didn't remember this until looking at this document right now.
Does it say Carl would like to know some particulars as he fields these calls? Is that in the email?
It is.
And that's Carl Rove?
I assume so.
Do you have many other...
No,
Carl spelled with a K?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. I think it must have been.
Okay. And you responded by copying Mr. Jennings, asking him to call you, and then sent another email to Kelly, yourself asking Kelly to forward something to Mr. Jennings. What were you asking Mr. Kelly to forward to Mr. Rove's deputy?
I don't remember, Mr. Chairman.
Jesus, God. Okay, then Republican Arlen Specter takes the mic and at least got Sampson to admit that Gonzalez lied in his March 13th televised news conference when he claimed he, Gonzalez, was not involved in any discussions related to any of these firings because he was, because as Sampson says, he was at least at one noted meeting, probably many more, where the firings were discussed.
In his press conference on March the 13th, Attorney General Gonzalez said that he was not involved in any discussions relating to the issue. Was your email correct that Attorney General Gonzalez was present at a meeting on November 21st at which there were discussions about U.S. attorneys?
I don't think the Attorney General's statement that he was not involved in any discussions about U.S. attorney removals is accurate.
Uh-oh.
Is what? Is accurate?
I don't think it's accurate. I remember discussing with him this process of asking certain U.S. attorneys to resign, and I believe that he was present at the meeting on November 27th.
So he was involved in discussions, contrary to the statement he made at his news conference on March 13th.
I believe, yes, sir.
In other words, let me see. In other words, he lied. Is that what you're saying, Mr. Sampson? Well, what is it that is so difficult for people to use the term lie? Why didn't Arlen Specter come back, or Pat Leahy, or Kennedy, or any of them say, well, in other words, what you're saying, Mr. Sampson, is that at the press briefings the other day, March 13th, Gonzalez lied. What is it about the word lie? They had no problem using it against Clinton. They had no problem using it. That's all you heard. I remember being at a party in Chicago where a woman leaned over to me and said, I hate Bill Clinton. I said, why? She said, because he's an effing liar. And people in Congress, people in the Senate, the House, they didn't have any problem talking about Clinton being. What is it that nobody can call these Republican pigs liars?
You're listening to Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
8 before the hour. Back to the hearings today. Arlen Specter, after he asked a question of Sampson, who then kind of put it into Senate testimony, what everybody has known, Gonzalez is a liar, just an absolute liar. Specter then asked Sampson, if it was true that he, Sampson, advocated the misuse of the Patriot Act provision to appoint attorneys that didn't have to be approved by the Senate. In other words, it's in there, let's use it. That's why we put it in there. Sampson admitted it was his idea, and although he claims Gonzalez didn't approve of the idea, he has no emails or documents or anything to back that up.
Isn't it true, as these emails suggest, that there was a calculation on your part and the part of others in the Department of Justice to utilize this new provision to avoid confirmation by the Senate and to avoid scrutiny by the Senate and to avoid having senators participate in the selection of replacement U.S. attorneys?
Senator, that was a bad idea by staff that was not adopted by the principals. I did advocate that at different times. But it was never adopted by Judge Gonzalez or by Ms. Myers or any of the decision makers.
It was your idea, at least your idea according to the emails.
I recommended that at one point, but it was never adopted by the Attorney General.
Was it ever rejected by the Attorney General or Ms. Myers?
It was rejected by the Attorney General. He thought it was a bad idea, and he was right.
Do you have an email or any confirmation of that rejection?
I didn't communicate with the Attorney General by email, so I don't.
And if you did communicate with the Attorney General by email, it was an off-site email account, which we all know now is Sidney Blumenthal and Jason, what's his name over at Jason Leopold at Truthout. Both of these writers, one at Salon and one at Truthout, have now explained to anyone who wants to understand how these calculating sons of bitches who, even though everybody's running around saying, well, no crimes were committed, then why did they cover their trail? Why did they use emails that are not subject to the Presidential Records Act of 1978, another one of those bills that was passed after the corrupting influence of Richard Nixon? So, and the bill essentially says that everything has to be, there has to be a record of correspondence, they have to be kept. When you're using intergovernmental, I guess back then they had fax, they did have fax, didn't they, back in the late 70s? Yeah, fax machines or recorded phone calls or whatever the means or method of communication with letters, notes, delivery messages, yada, yada. Everything had to go through the proper channels. With the advent of the internet and email, it was determined that you had to use whitehouse.gov or whatever the email channel was, so that there was a record of whatever passed, not just between the president and his aides, but among those aides. So knowing this, you see, everybody in the Bush White House, and they chuckle about it and laugh about it and make jokes about it, and Karl Rove can get up and rap about it like some pasty-faced doughboy, make a total, I mean, he just embarrasses the entire white race when he does that, doesn't he? Isn't that what we always say about black folks? If you get one black folk that does something wrong, the entire black race, how does it feel to have it on the other, the shoe on the other foot? Karl Rove makes the entire white race look horrible, doesn't he? But in the meantime, while they're doing that, they're using off-site email accounts through the Republican National Committee and probably through NBC News and probably through any of these corporations or companies or locations that want to see this corrupt son of a bitch stay in office. It's just mind-boggling what they are doing here. But I have a feeling that their little house of cards is... When it does collapse, it's not going to sound like a house of cards, you know, flitter, flutter, flutter. It's going to sound like shock and awe on Baghdad. That's what it's going to sound like. All right, we have to take a break here. When we come back, we'll pick it up with Charles Schumer taking a crack at Samson, pinning him down on another Gonzalez press conference lie. And let me see. Take a look at this stuff. All right, we should probably get to some calls sometime next hour. So stick around. Get out your big bag of popcorn and listen to what these freaks had to say today. We'll see you on the other side of the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Seven past the hour. You know, the other thing that sort of made a deep impression on me, not sort of, but did make a deep impression on me today was the almost preternatural sameness to the sound of the voices of so many people who work in the Bush-Cheney administration. Now, certainly not Cheney. I mean, he talks like this and, you know, But the tone of voice of so many of these people is almost pre-adolescent, especially the men. Have you noticed that? This Kyle Samson, like Gonzalez, is another example. Every time Gonzalez talks, I want to look around behind me to see where the 16-year-old is who's really doing the talking. Chertoff is the same way. Brownie was the same way. Just on and on and on. It's like so many of these people, these males, are suffering from a severe case of arrested development, at least where it concerns their vocal cords. Maybe their testicles haven't descended. I don't know what it is, but they all sound like, all right, not prepubescent, but certainly just barely post-adolescent males, and it drives me crazy. Listen, you'll hear what I'm talking about. Now, in this soundbite, Charles Schumer then takes a crack at Samson, pinning him down on another Gonzalez March 13th press conference lie. Gonzalez had attributed the administration's conflicting stories about the U.S. attorney purge to his chief of staff, Kyle Sampson, not sharing properly the information with senior Department of Justice officials before they testified on Capitol Hill. In other words, it was just all a mistake, and that it was Kyle Sampson's fault. Oh, you just didn't do it right. And the other thing, Gonzalez sounds an awful lot like Michael Jackson. I might as well get that said. I don't know. So Schumer forces Sampson to admit that he did share information with two senior Department of Justice officials, McNulty and Moshella. And it was Moshella who later gave the mistaken and erroneous testimony to Congress that Gonzalez now regrets so much.
At the same press conference, the Attorney General also said the charge for the chief of staff here was to drive this process. And the mistake that occurred here was that information that he had was not shared with individuals within the department who were then going to be providing testimony and information to Congress. Okay? He said that the mistake that occurred here was that information you had, Kyle Sampson had, was not shared with individuals within the department. Is that true or false?
Senator, I shared... I shared information with anyone who wanted it. I was very open and collaborative in the process, in the preparation for Mr. McNulty and Mr. Moshella's testimony.
So I want to ask, did you share information with Mr. McNulty and Mr. Moshella?
I did.
So the Attorney General's statement is wrong. It's false. How can it not be? If you shared information with Mr. McNulty and Mr. Moshella, and the Attorney General is saying it wasn't shared with individuals in the department who were providing testimony to wit, Moshella and McNulty, his statement's false, correct?
Senator, as I look back on that process, the problem was that we were focused on other questions. And I think any information that I didn't provide was...
Time is limited. The statement is false, correct? Statement's false. There's no way to believe it's not.
I don't think it's accurate if the statement implies that I intend...
Not accurate. The statement is a lie. Come on, Chuck, just say it. The statement's a lie. But do you hear Samson's voice? Oh, I know. It's another one of my cheap shot ad hominem attacks. I don't care. These people sound like children. They do. So Schumer now goes back and forth with Sampson about Rove's involvement in the scandal, Karl Rove's involvement, specifically asking if Rove had any knowledge of Sampson's suggestion that Patrick Fitzgerald should be fired, you know, the Libby prosecutor. Sampson just couldn't say with 100% certainty that Rove was not involved.
Did Karl Rove have anything to do with your suggestion that Fitzgerald be fired?
I don't remember anything like that. I don't think so. I don't
Can
remember.
You sort
I don't
of search
remember
your memory
ever
and
speaking,
be sure of that.
I don't, Senator. I just want to answer to the best of my recollection. I don't remember ever speaking to Karl Rove about anything related to Patrick.
How about to any of his people who worked in his office or worked for him?
I don't remember any such conversation.
Okay. Is it possible? Because you're not ruling it out.
To the best of my recollection, no, I don't remember that.
Well, I don't remember it, or it's not possible.
I don't think it happened.
You don't think it happened would mean there's a chance that it's possible, correct?
Senator, I don't think it happened. I don't remember any such conversation.
Okay, but you're not willing to say unequivocally not.
I don't remember any such conversation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, my God. This is why it doesn't require a subpoena. For Kyle Sampson, Rove knows that by sending this pipsqueak up there, so they're going to rat out Gonzalez, but Rove and some of the inside boys have been wanting to get rid of Gonzalez anyway. They don't like Gonzalez. Like Rove, Gonzalez comes from Texas, and Rove and Gonzalez have been at each other's throats, so to speak, for a favored position on George W. Bush's knee. Ever since Texas governor days. So, as far as getting Gonzalez, nobody cares at this point. They don't give a damn. Goodbye, Gonzo. What they care about is covering up the bigger issue, and that is the corruption and crime that has been run out of the Oval Office under the control of Dick Cheney and Karl Rove. So as far as Kyle Sampson is concerned, he's a perfect a little schmuck to send up to Capitol Hill and testify. This guy will just sit there and just go, I don't remember. I don't have any recollection. I guess it's possible. Well, maybe it's possible. Well, I don't know. Maybe. What? Where? I don't know. I have no recollection. I don't know. So Illinois Senator Dick Durbin continues in this line, asking Sampson about Sampson's suggestion to Myers and Gonzalez that Patrick Fitzgerald's name could be added to the list, you know, people to get rid of. Now, keeping in mind that Patrick Fitzgerald is in the middle of this crucial investigation, and, of course, the twit naturally can't remember why he made this suggestion, but I'm sure Rove had nothing to do with it.
Were you ever party to any conversation about the removal of Patrick Fitzgerald from his position as Northern District U.S. Attorney?
I remember on one occasion in 2006, in discussing the removal of U.S. attorneys or the process of considering some U.S. attorneys that might be asked to resign, that I was speaking with Harriet Myers and Bill Kelly, and I raised Pat Fitzgerald. And immediately after I did it, I regretted it. I thought I knew that it was the wrong thing to do. I knew that it was inappropriate.
Do you recall what you said at the time about Patrick Fitzgerald?
I said Patrick Fitzgerald could be added to this list.
And there was no response?
No. They looked at me like I had said something totally inappropriate, and I had.
Why did you say it? Why did you recommend or at least suggest that he be removed as U.S. attorney?
I'm not sure. I think I don't remember.
You little rat bastard, you. Oh, perfect. Perfect little twit. Is that right?
I don't remember. I really don't remember. Can I go to the bathroom for a minute now? I don't remember. I can't remember. Do I get a break? What do I do, Senator Lady? Do I raise my hand? Ooh.
Just incredible stuff. What you are watching, or what you watched today, if you saw any of this, what you're hearing tonight, is just a tiny, tiny millislice of the corruption and the inexperience and the adolescent attitude and the complete inability to govern that the Bush crime family has brought to this country.
Investigate every single complaint against the detainees and the allegations by people who were held in detention, people who hate America, people that have been trained to disassemble. That means not tell the truth.
And we decided to hire them all, put them in the Justice Department under Alberto Mitiano. All right, now Senator Kennedy catches this little twit, Kyle Sampson, in a whopper about Karl Rove's insistence that Bud Cummings in Arkansas be fired and replaced with Carl's little crony, Timothy Griffin. Kyle Sampson here contradicts his own email to the White House, which stated the email stated that Sampson knew that Griffin's appointment was, quote, important to Rove and Myers, end quote. Now, Sampson claims, with his faulty memory, that Rove and Myers wanted to replace Cummings with this Griffin freak, that all that was just an assumption that he, Sampson, was making, just a wild guess. But he really didn't know if Rove wanted Griffin to replace Cummings. Yeah, right. A cleaned-up version of this letter was then approved by the White House, one that did not mention Rove's personal desire to put his inexperienced little friend in place of Cummings. Just this week, the Justice Department admitted that this letter was inaccurate. And, of course, Kyle Sampson can't recall.
You remember the December 19th letter from yourself to the White House, where you used those words, knowing that getting him appointed, referring to Griffin, was important to Harriet and Carl. That's what you wrote.
That email was based on an assumption.
Okay.
When I participated in the drafting of that letter, I did not remember then ever having talked to Mr. Rove about it. I don't remember now ever having talked to Mr. Rove about it. I'm not sure whether Mr. Rove was supportive of Mr. Griffin's appointment.
Well, what I'm getting at is that you did mention that in your first email that this was important to Carl, etc., and then in the general letter that was circulated to the White House, that aspect was dropped, and the White House effectively approved a letter. And today, the Justice Department has admitted that the letter was inaccurate in asserting the department was not aware of Carl Rove. That's the sequence as I see it. Is that about what you understand?
I don't remember Carl Rove ever talking to me in person or on the phone. I don't remember anyone telling me that Mr. Rove was interested in Mr. Griffin being appointed.
I don't remember.
And that was my understanding at the time I participated in the drafting of that letter.
Okay. Well, then do you know why you would mention it in your email where you said that was important to Harriet and Carl if there was no reason? Do you know, have any idea why you would write that?
As I said, that was based on an assumption.
That was based on an assumption. Based on an assumption. No, no, it wasn't. And we know it wasn't, you little twit, because you don't go to the toilet unless you ask Carl Rove or Gonzalez whether you can go do number one or number two. And you don't go unless they hand you the tissue to take into the crapper with you. That's so clear.
I don't have any recollection. I forget it in my mind. In my mind, I forget it. Senator Herb Cole then pointed out an issue that we brought up on the program a few nights ago. I guess we're going to have to wait for this next one. But the issue is, if Gonzalez is telling the truth, that he had no knowledge or discussion of these unprecedented firings, then isn't he incompetent? In other words, there are firings going on in the Department of Justice. The federal attorneys, of which there are only 93, are being fired? By whom? If not Gonzalez. If his story is true, which we all know at this point it is not, and someone else is doing these firings, then who would it be? Carl Rove? Dick Cheney? Who would be... So, Gonzalez, through the testimony today of this twit, is now totally painted into a corner. What's he going to say? I did know. Okay, then you're a liar. I didn't know. Okay, then you're totally incompetent. What's it going to be, Gonzo?
Desperate man. aware of every bit of information that passes through the halls of the Department of Justice, nor am I aware of all decisions. As a general matter, some 2 years ago, I was made aware that there was a request from the White House as to the possibility of...
From now on, you'll be history.
You'll be history.
You'll be history.
You'll be history.
And we will glorify your name. You'll be a bust.
You'll be a bust.
In the Hall of Fame.
The Lollipop Guild. It's just bizarre. And that was one of the most frightening scenes in my childhood. The second most frightening, the most frightening scene was when the Wicked Witch of the West called out the flying monkeys. That was the, but the second scariest scene was the Munchkins. Holy God! For years afterwards, I couldn't sleep. I couldn't go to sleep at night without six nightlights on. And here we are again, the Munchkins.
Yeah, I don't know anything. I don't remember. I have no recollection. Well, I thought in my mind.
Senator Herb Cole at the hearings today now points out an issue that we brought up on the program a few nights ago. If Gonzalez is telling the truth, and he had no knowledge, no discussion of these unprecedented firings, then isn't he part of the Lollipop Guild? Here, Sampson admits that Gonzalez had to sign off on the firings.
Well, that kind of makes sense.
Proving another Gonzalez lie.
We've heard the Attorney General compare his management style to that of a CEO. He seems to have said in recent days that he was not involved in determining which U.S. attorneys would be fired or for what reason, and yet he did acknowledge that he signed off on the final list of terminations that you compiled. In essence, he is saying that he permitted his deputies to fire almost 10% of the U.S. attorneys with almost no input from him at all. Now, this is hard to believe. Either the Attorney General is simply absent as manager of the Justice Department, or he's not been candid with the American people about his participation in the firings. Which one is it, or is there some other explanation?
Well, as I said in a previous answer, the Attorney General was aware of this process from the beginning in early 2005. He and I had discussions about it during the thinking phase of the process. Then after the sort of more final phase of the process in the fall of 2006 began, we discussed it. He asked me to make sure that the process was appropriate, that I was consulting with the Deputy Attorney General and others in developing the list. And then ultimately he approved both the list and the notion of going forward and asking for these resignations.
Well, I think we need a little music. So I get this email from AEB who says, what you tried to say about the tenor voices of the members of the administration is that they sound like they are court eunuchs. Yeah, they do. They sound like the castrati. Isn't that the term, the castrati? Those people, those males who early on had their testicles cut off so they could sing in such a manner as to entertain at court. Is that what we're hearing here from these little munchkins? Now it's Dianne Feinstein's turn. She begins by reading a letter extolling the virtues of Carol Lam as an excellent U.S. attorney. She's the woman from San Diego who put Duke Cunningham's ass in prison, which is where he belongs for probably the next 20 years, and also was going after Fogo, Dusty Fogo, the number three person, I think, at the CIA. And Carol Lam was, and was developing links to show the connections, I believe, between the Bush crime family and Abramoff, where it concerned Abramoff's input into the firing of a federal attorney in Samoa? Was it Samoa? The federal attorney who started to investigate Tom DeLay and Abramoff's activities out there in the Western Pacific, which we mentioned. Some of this stuff is just so monumentally corrupt, it's almost impossible to stay abreast of things. So, Feinstein begins by reading this letter about the virtues of Carol Lam as an excellent U.S. attorney, then questions the story Samson is putting out there about her dismissal over failing to prosecute immigration cases. Feinstein goes through a long laundry list about the specifics of each firing. Yet again, Samson's memory fails him.
Oh, I don't remember.
Sure looks like it was Carol Lam's investigation into Dusty Fargo at the CIA and Duke Cunningham that was the real problem the Department of Justice had with Carol Lam.
Who, Mr. Samson, was Dusty Fargo, or is Dusty Fargo?
I understand from news reports, Senator, and from general knowledge that he was an employee at the CIA.
And who is Mr. Wilkes?
I don't know. I understand again from news reports that he's affiliated somehow with Mr. Fargo.
News report.
And are you aware that on May 10th, Carol Lam sent a notice to the Department of Justice saying she would be seeking a search warrant of the CIA investigation into Dusty Fargo and Brent Wilkes?
No.
I don't remember ever seeing such a notice.
Ew.
But the next day you wrote the email which says the real problem we have right now with Carol Lam that leads me to conclude we should have someone ready to be nominated on 11/18, the day after her four-year term expires. That relates to her immigration record?
The real problem that I was referring to in that email was her office's failure to bring sufficient immigration cases.
Senator Feinstein then asks if Samson knew that fired prosecutor Bud Cummings over there in Arkansas was considering an investigation of Republican Governor Blunt, or if he knew that Dan Bogden had opened a probe against Nevada Governor Dan Gibbons, or that John McKay declined to intervene in the Washington governor's case. This went on and on. If you didn't see it, it was just a real knee slapper. But we're to believe that none of these firings were politically motivated, and all were based on poor performance where concerns, immigration cases?
Were you aware that Bud Cummins was looking at an investigation into Missouri Republican Governor Roy Blunt? I'm just asking if you were aware of that.
I don't remember being aware of that.
Okay. To the best of your knowledge, was the Attorney General?
I don't know.
Were there any discussions that you heard that discussed this?
No, I don't remember being aware of that.
Okay. Were you aware that Dan Bogden had opened a probe relating to Nevada Republican Governor Jim Gibbons?
I don't remember being aware of that.
You were not. Were you aware that John McKay declined to intervene in a contentious governor's race in Seattle?
I remember hearing about that
in the press.
Back in 2005, I believe.
Yeah, read about it.
But I don't really have any specific recollection about that. I may just have heard of that through news accounts.
Yeah.
Were you aware that Paul Charlton had opened preliminary probes into Republican Congressman Jim Colby and Rick Renzi before the November election?
I think that I was aware of that through news accounts.
Okay. And were you aware that David Iglesias had been overseeing an investigation of state Democrats?
I don't remember being aware of that until, you know, the last month or so.
Oh, my God.
Were you aware that calls were made to Mr. Iglesias?
I was not aware of that.
Were you aware that there were concerns with that case?
I was not aware of any concerns with any particular case in New Mexico.
We'll be right back.
I am responsible for what happens at the Department of Justice. I acknowledge that mistakes were made here.
It's about 9 before the hour. Even Republican Senator from Alabama, Jeff Sessions, wasn't happy with Gonzalez. Can't blame him. Torquemada is giving all the other criminals in the GOP a bad name.
This idea to remove a number of United States attorneys, did the Attorney General himself object? Did he call to the White House and say this is not a good idea?
No.
Now, I think we've got to talk about this November 27th meeting. The Attorney General himself said he was not involved in any discussions about what's going on. We never had a discussion about where things stood. Now, this was a pretty big meeting. Your emails indicate you understood the seriousness of, at least politically, if not substantively, of removing a number of United States attorneys. Memos had been sent out. A lot of people of key importance were at that meeting. Isn't it true?
Yes.
And the Attorney General stayed the whole time?
I don't remember specifically. I know that he was there at least for a portion of the meeting. I think he's acknowledged as much in the last couple of days. I remember in my mind that it was in the Attorney General's conference room.
Well, I don't think it was a small matter, and I think the Attorney General, I'm disappointed he didn't remember that in his statement.
Yeah, I remember that in my mind. Sometimes I remember things in my feet, but that I remember that in my mind. I really did. Patrick Leahy had to stop Charles Grassley from questioning Sampson because Senate Republicans at this point invoked some procedural rule in an attempt to stop the hearing. It was at this point, even when they lose elections, they just don't give up. Still trying to run the show, still trying to prevent the truth from ever getting out about anything, Republican members of Congress are lying little bastards who are absolutely useless to the American public and serve a tremendous function to the removal of representative government in this country and its replacement with fascism. That is their purpose. After about 25 minutes, the hearings resumed. And Leahy explained, just so people can understand what's going on here, the lack of permission going forward has now been changed. I had raised questions and whatever objection there was on the Republican side has been withdrawn so that we can continue. When Mr. Sampson comes back, we will start with Senator Durbin. Somebody there just asked me if this all could have been just an accident, that we had this lack of concurrence by the Republicans to go forward. I grew up in a faith that believes in miracles, and it's conceivable as an accident. I've been here 33 years, and I've never seen this happen before. So maybe it was an accident, but I suspect it was not.
We thank you for being here.
The senator would yield, and I apologize. Apologize, Mr. Sampson. We've just received word that the Republicans that have objected under the Senate rules to this meeting continuing. I think that's unfortunate. I will follow the rules of the Senate.
Does it apply to a Republican, too?
The Republicans are the ones that don't want to have the hearing, so the Republicans have the right under the rules to do that. We will stand, we will not adjourn. We will stand in recess until the Senate recesses. We will come back, and Senator Grassley, if he wishes to be heard further, will be the first one to be heard.
Thank you.
Unbelievable. Just unbelievable. Oh, God.
We represent the Lollipop Guild, the Lollipop Guild,
the Lollipop Guild,
and in the name of
the Lollipop Guild,
we wish to welcome you to Lunch and
Oh, my God. We'll announce our Dana Perino nickname winner tomorrow night. You can still send entries tonight if you want to. Send them to MalloyProducer@AOL.com if you want to win a Shut Up and Sing DVD. We'll take entries up till midnight Eastern time tonight. Then we'll announce the winner tomorrow. So you've got one final hour here to enter. Put the word contest in the subject line and email your nickname to MalloyProducer@AOL.com. And we have been getting some good entries. We really have. We ought to have a contest that names the Munchkins, but we've already named them. That's so right on. These people are just they're like children, and the Munchkins in The Wizard of Oz were cast that way. They were just little childlike creatures, right? There's no respect in that movie for the folks that call themselves little people, the dwarves, people who are dealing with dwarfism. You know, it's just that's just the way it goes. If you're a little person, you dress up and you be a little clown or a freak or a fool. And it seems like members of the Bush administration, come on, we'll make you a federal attorney.
I don't have a law degree.
That's okay. We'll make you the Secretary of Defense.
Well, I don't know anything about the military.
That's okay. We'll make you the Secretary of Treasury. I have a tendency to be honest. Okay, well, that's all right. As soon as you get honest, we'll fire your ass. Come here, we'll make you Secretary of State.
I don't know. I used to be the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
That's all right. Come on. No qualifications required to work in the... As a matter of fact, being qualified for a position guarantees you won't get it.
Thank you.
7 past the hour. That's all the sand we've got. That's about all we can handle. Let me share with you what Alicia wrote regarding the childish voices here. She writes, "Hi, Mike. I noticed that too, the childish voices. They sound like adolescents. Maybe it's because of a theory of mine, which is that rather than the daddy party, Republicans, and mommy party, Democrats, instead the Republicans are the child party and the Democrats are the parent party." Here's what I wrote last week. "So many things are happening right now, the hearings on Valerie Plame, Gonzo Gate, you name it, that keeping up with it all is hard to do. As soon as I think of something to say about one subject, another one explodes. So instead, I think I'll talk about the thread running through all this, the utter childishness of the Republican Party. You will often hear the two parties called the Daddy Party, the Republicans, the Mommy Party, the Democrats, intimating that the Republicans are more disciplined and realistic and the Democrats are more emotional and feel-goody. I would like to set before you another view, the Democrats as the parent party and the Republicans as the child party. While that may seem to fly in the face of conventional wisdom, think about this. If you have kids or have them around, some of this may sound familiar. Children, like Republicans, tend to think in absolutes, in black and white, right and wrong, good guys and bad guys. Nuance confuses them. They like their answers to be simple and direct. Children need an authority over them telling them what to do. Children are concerned with self rather than others. They want what they want when they want it, and it's difficult for a child to empathize with others' needs. Children will throw a tantrum to get what they want, even if what they want right now will hurt them in the long run. Children don't want to accept responsibility for anything. It's always, he did it too. It was his idea, not mine. He made me do it. It's not my fault. It wasn't me. Even in the face of direct evidence. If they think they can get away with it, they will say they didn't take the chocolate chip cookie with crumbs and chocolate smeared all over their faces. Children like to play war or fighting games. If other people get hurt, it doesn't register with them the way it does when they get hurt. Children chafe at the rules, regulations, and oversight, even when it's to their advantage. Children like symbols and slogans and logos, and they are very easily manipulated by the use of these. It's no accident that many kids' first symbol recognition is of McDonald's Golden Arches. Now, let me say here that in children, this is appropriate behavior. There are good reasons that they are born selfish. It is for survival. But children will outgrow this if they are raised properly. As adults, we should know better. Democrats, on the other hand, understand that it's not all about us and screw everybody else. We take our responsibilities to ourselves and each other seriously. We understand that if others are suffering, that it's not okay, even if we're doing all right ourselves. No, we're not perfect, but we do understand that the world is complex. The issues that face us are complex. And we can't substitute slogans, banners, and jingoism for considered reasoning and looking at all sides of an issue. That's what the kids call flip-flopping. Good stuff, Alicia. She writes for Last Left Before Hooterville.blogspot.com. Last Left. B, the letter B, the numeral 4, and then Hooterville, Last Left, B, 4, Hooterville.blogspot.com. That's a good piece. That's well put. And our correspondent from Boone, North Carolina, regarding their voices, writes, "Mike, exactly. Listen to an old tape of Himmler or Gonzalez, or Samson, or Rove, or Hayden. They're all of the same ilk, whiny, cowardly, sniveling, creepy, but cowardly most of all when they get caught." Yeah, it's something to watch. If you had a chance to see some of it today, C-SPAN may be rebroadcasting it even as we speak. And not just this creep, but so many of these Republicans that are hauled before Congress, either by subpoena or threat of subpoena, and you watch their body language. The guy who was the assistant to Secretary of the Interior, what was her name? Gail Norton, who has now copped a plea and is going to prison. When he was testifying a few months back, and I watched his body language, even sitting down, you watch what they do, watch their facial expressions, watch for the tics and the involuntary movements that indicate self-loathing and self-contempt. At the same time, it indicates an arrogance that totally overrides that self-loathing. And that, I think, is what constitutes hubris. A complete understanding that you're going to screw up, but in order to overcome that, you adopt this attitude, or they adopt this attitude of absolute superiority. Is that not a Nazi? Is that not Alexander the Great? Is that not Julius Caesar? Is that not any tyrant in the history of the human race? Is it not this crew? But this guy today, I would think that the United States military and all of its wisdom, quote, about how to treat people at Guantanamo would simply take a 9-hour tape from today, from today's hearings, and use that to get these poor, miserable sons of bitches that have been scooped up all over the world, get them to talk. Just show them. Kyle Sampson. Make them listen. It doesn't matter that it's not in the language that they speak. To hear this whiny little turkey sitting there, you can tell by the cadence. You don't have to understand the language. You can tell that he's a whiner. That he's a fall guy. That he's Winston Smith without the drama. He's a cog. He's a non-entity. Who is ever going to remember his name except for his testimony today? He's a cipher. But in the position that he holds, he can do so much damage. He can be part of this larger plan, plot, whatever you want to call it, to utterly and absolutely debase the U.S. Constitution. Ruin what good people have spent 230 years trying to build. And he does it with the anonymity he so richly deserves until something like this comes up. And then you get to see the face that Hannah Arendt talked about. That banality of evil. Not to compare this piece of human waste with Eichmann by any stretch of the imagination, but whether you are engineering the murder of 6 million Jews or engineering the murder of the United States Constitution, your attitude is going to have to be essentially the same. You have no respect for human life. You have no respect for the rule of law. You have no respect for the thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of people that have died in an attempt to leave a legacy of freedom for the rest of us. Oh, my God. That's why these people just, they make my guts hurt. It's just watching putrefied human beings who are in such positions of horrendous, out-of-control power. And even, I mean, if they were just halfway normal, they would use the power openly and straightforwardly, wouldn't they? But no, these little pissants even go so far as to use off-site emails, email systems. So we can't be caught. Let's do this. I know the Republican National Committee, they'll give us an email account. And I don't know, maybe somebody else will too. I hate them. When we come back, we're going to take your phone calls. The number here is 800-989-1480. I'm Mike Malloy.
primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
All right, 21 past the hour. Let us go to your phone calls. Let's go to Charles, who's calling from Illinois. Charles, welcome to the program.
Oh, hello, Mike.
Hey.
It's been a long time since I was able to talk to you.
Well, welcome back to the program.
Oh, thank you. It's been a long, hard time trying to pick you back up again. Last time I talked to you, I had just left teaching school, trying to keep from falling back in that, but it looks like eventually I probably have to fall back into it.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I know. It's difficult when you run through these people who want to sit there and they actually think that the president's plans actually work when you even with no money.
Yeah, right.
But when I was younger and was able to finally figure things out, I was able to watch the Watergate hearings as they went through all those fun little activities, and you could tell the arrogance that was on them then. And then, of course, when you had the Iran-Contra thing, looking at Oliver North standing there with his superior looks, and I don't know why the devil that clown isn't still sitting in prison.
Really?
I know he got convicted. He overturned it on what would be classified, what the Republicans scream and yell about would be a technicality.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And I'm just surprised that they haven't started putting these clowns in jail right now. I mean, the only administration that could come close to matching them was the Grant administration, and that was over 100 years ago.
Well,
basically, the only one who was honest was Grant. Even the vice president was hauled off to jail.
What, was that the Teapot Dome scandal?
That was one of them. Actually, Teapot was a little later on.
Okay.
But, yeah, they had several other scandals along in there. I mean, they had scandals in the Bureau of Indian Affairs, the Supreme Court. At the time when the Supreme Court said that a business was actually a person.
Yeah.
Along with Plessy versus Ferguson.
Well, the difference, I think, is that this Bush regime, in context, I think is the most corrupt regime ever to run as poorly as they are this country, because we are in a nuclear age. We are in an age when the Republican Party has descended into slime, at least in Nixon's day, which was almost as bad in terms of context. There were still Republicans who had some decency in them, who believed that the advancement of the republic in terms of how we govern ourselves and politically was foremost. We don't have that anymore. We have Republicans now who are nothing more than shills for either corporate America or the religious freaks. They're kind of like the American Taliban. So all things being equal, I think, which they're not, I think this administration is the most dangerous as well as being the most corrupt. Charles, let me move on. We're running out of time here, and I want to get some more calls. And thanks, and don't be a stranger, okay? Take care. Scott is calling from Federal Way. Hey, Scott, welcome to the program. Federal Way, Washington. Hey, Scott.
Yeah, I wanted to mention about our federal prosecutor up here that was fired over the 04 election over here, the gubernatorial election. And I don't know if you're familiar about the drama that happened behind that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We used to, back in the Air America days, we were reporting on that at least once a week. For, it seemed like endlessly.
So you know that ultimately that case ended up going to court because Dina Lossie contested it because we had a recount that was state mandated. The recount came up. He was 42 votes ahead. And then when Christine Gregoire opposed it and they paid for their recount, they came out 129 votes ahead. And that's how she won.
Right.
Well, anyway, the Rossi camp was alleging that Democrats committed fraud, that they were talking about criminals voting and about supposedly, allegedly dead people that were voting.
Uh-huh.
And the case with the criminals is that some of them had been convicted felons, but they were eligible to apply for their voters, to have their voters' rights reinstated. Well, anyway, that case went into court, and this was, by the way, a conservative judge, by the way, in a conservative part of the state,
mm-hmm.
who ruled, and the way that he ended up ruling that case was in such a way that it made it almost impossible for the Rossi camp to appeal it because they were saying that statistically that they couldn't prove that these that the felons had voted one way or the other, because in this state you just register to vote, you don't register by party,
right.
And that the examples of the so-called dead voters voting, they presented examples that the people voted for Rossi. So in a sense, the case had already had been ruled. So there really wouldn't have been any point for McKay to have launched an investigation.
Right, but of course the truth is it had nothing to do with not prosecuting voter fraud cases.
It had everything to do
With political appointees, the corruption of the Justice Department. And I think we're all on the same page on that. Scott, I got to leave it there. Thanks, pal. We'll talk again. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Everybody knows that it's now or never. Everybody knows that it's me or you. Everybody knows that you live forever when you're gonna.
Don't go to bed angry. Let Mike Malloy do it for you on Nova M Radio.
Oh, it's about 25 before the hour. Back to your phone calls. Alan is calling from Matthews, Missouri. Hey, Alan, welcome to the program.
Yeah, Mike, I'm a regular listener, first-time caller.
Welcome aboard.
All right. Just want to make an observation. You know, most people begin to lose their memory as they reach middle age and on into their 50s and 60s. I find it interesting that Republicans seem to lose it around 20 or so, or, you know. 30,
yeah,
maybe.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, maybe it's something in the Dom Perignon. I don't know.
That could be.
You know.
Oh, my God. I when I heard him going through that litany of I don't remembers today, I keep a bunch of cushions near me when I'm watching this kind of stuff on television because I know I'm going to start throwing stuff. And that's what I was doing, throwing bed cushions at the television and just hooting and laughing. This would be hysterically funny if it weren't for the fact that they're killing our system of government. They're destroying everything.
Well, you know, talking about how you react to the television, I can certainly relate to that, and that kind of leads into my next point. I was watching Larry King the other night, and they had four talk show hosts, two of which were conservative. Mm-hmm. And I've got to say, I think specifically the second-tier conservative talk show host. I won't name names, but these people are just vermin. They lie by omission, and it makes me want to throw things at the television. Mm-hmm. This guy looked right into the screen and says, well, you know, when Clinton fired the 93, it's the same thing. He fired the 93 attorneys, and, you know, they leave out all of these other things
sure.
that are relevant. And it just, I have a question about this. I'm 37 years old. I just recently, maybe 2 years ago, really got into following politics. And as I understand it, media consolidation has kind of been the root cause of some of this. How different was did we get more truth in broadcasting back in the day, back in the 60s, 70s, I mean, 80s? I mean, it's, you know, because for them to just look into the camera and just bold-faced with all the confidence in the world, lie by omission, is the most damaging thing I can't even describe how damaging that
yeah,
is.
I hear what you're saying, and the quick answer is we didn't necessarily get more truth on the radio 25 years ago in terms of what talk radio was back then, but we were forced to present both sides of an issue. There never would have been, back in the day when there was the Fairness Doctrine, there never would have been a Rush Limbaugh. If there would have been a Rush Limbaugh, he would have been designated as, a comedian, somebody who was doing political satire. When I first heard Limbaugh back in the late 80s, I thought that's what I was listening to, a political satire. I didn't realize that this hunk of blubber was actually an operative for the Republican National Committee. I had no idea. And as I listened to him over the years, you know, obviously, like everyone else, it became very clear what his goal, what his objective was. But anyway, to answer your question, yeah, back in the day, and it wasn't that long ago, I've been in radio about 24 years, and I've said this before, I would be presented with a list every quarter of the topics, six or seven topics I had to cover from both angles, from a conservative and a liberal, although they didn't use those terms. They used pro and con. And you had to present. Now, you could talk about anything else you wanted to, but if you talked about, I got into radio, talk radio during the first intifada in the Middle East, and if I presented the Palestinian side of the issue, I had also to present the Israeli side of the issue. If on a given night I presented the Israeli side, I had to then present the Palestinian side, on and on and on. So the quick answer is there wasn't necessarily more truth back then, but there was balance. And then it was up to listeners. Program directors used to believe that listeners had the ability or the common sense or the uncommon sense to listen to both sides of an argument and decide not just which one they agreed with, but which one was true. And those days are gone. With consolidation and the elimination of liberal talk, let me give you an example. When you go to the New York Times or your local newspaper and you open it up, there's not a section called labor, but there is a section called business. Mm-hmm. So it's always been skewed to the right. It always has in this country, always. But we're concerned broadcast. That's what the FCC was originally charged to do, is to make sure that the public airwaves were used to serve the public. And that seems like such a quaint idea now. So the end of the Fairness Doctrine in the 80s under Reagan, and the end passage of consolidation in the 90s under Clinton, pretty much ended whatever shards or shreds of balance ever existed in talk radio. We're down to about, I think I read it tonight, there are maybe 50 or 60 stations in the United States that are programmed, talk stations that are programmed exclusively or almost exclusively to liberal talk. There are another 900 that are programmed the other way to conservative lies, even though the country is not conservative. But the people who run the radio networks, the program directors, this mid-level managers, they're just like the guy we saw today, Kyle Sampson. You can go through Infinity Broadcasting or Clear Channel Broadcasting or Westinghouse Broadcasting or whoever's left on the air. I don't even know who's left anymore. And if you take a look at their mid-level managers, the ones that make the programming decisions, they are just like Kyle Sampson. They are cowardly. They only suck up to power. They never take risks. And if you put liberal talk on your radio station, you are taking a risk. The risk being that advertisers will hear that, or corporations, or special, even to a greater degree, religious right groups or right-wing political groups will hear, what's this, a liberal on the radio, and will immediately just swamp that radio station with emails from their followers to say, get this guy or this woman off the air because they're a liberal. So that's what's going on. I'm sorry for the wordy answer, but that's pretty much it.
No, I've heard of the Fairness Doctrine, but really never had a good explanation. I really think that issue and the voting machine issue, I mean, I know the Democrats have a lot on their plate, but I really believe that in this 2-year window that we have, and I know we look strong going forward, but I really think that we need to address those things. I had one last thing real quick.
Okay.
I'm a truck driver. I drive from Laredo to Detroit and back to Laredo basically every single week.
Wow.
And I heard something about Bush did an executive order. He's going to let all the Mexican truckers in. Where can I go look and see when this guy does, when he does something to damage labor, which is every 20 minutes, where can I go? What do you know where I can go see these executive orders? Where is that?
Where it concerns that, I would try Teamsters Union website, AFL-CIO website, any union website will have information regarding that that directly pertains to your question. But just try the websites, International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, IBEW, or AFSCME, or any of these union websites. They'll have the information that you need, Alan, okay?
All right, ma'am.
Or even go to MotherJones.com and search their site. I'm sure they'll have something, too. All right?
All right, ma'am.
Thanks, Alan. Stay in touch. Good to hear from you. Take care. Take care. Faisal is calling from Canada. Where at in Canada, Faisal?
Hey, how are you, Mike?
I'm fine. Where are you calling from?
Well, I'm calling from Edmonton, Canada.
Edmonton.
I've had the opportunity of talking to you a couple times when you were on Air America, and I've been following you ever since.
Yeah, well, so, welcome back.
I'm up on the news. I'm just hoping 30 years from now, your daughter Molly will be still taking calls. So, you know. But by the way, you're talking, she's defiant against you, so I'm sure she'll be defiant against the main power. But, Mike, you know, I got to tell you something. I've got siblings in the United States who are citizens. I've got first cousins. When I being in my mid-40s, I've always been a big observer of the U.S. political force, more so than here in Canada. I know that's bad, but I don't think I've seen an administration with not only more corrupt, but more unqualified people in my life.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
From the president down, God, there is nobody that is qualified for any position in the higher end of the government. Now, with this U.S. attorney thing, I saw this little slime bucket today. I was listening to him. I've listened to the U.S. attorneys who were fired, particularly Mr. Iglesias, who's incredibly articulate.
Mm-hmm.
And when the the wound was gashed open with the Walter Reed thing, but when the U.S. attorney thing came down, they were playing it up like the Republicans, like, okay, these guys were inept. They weren't very good at their job. Now I see that they've unleashed these little rich white Republican attack dogs. All these guys are between 28 and 38 years old. Now they're changing their story, saying that these guys have political bias, when in fact all these gentlemen and ladies were doing were trying to uphold the law. They never showed any political bias whatsoever.
That's right. And
it changes all the time, whether it's Iraq or 9/11. They just create.
I know, and that's the horror of it. Faisal, I have to leave it there, pal.
Here, Mike, I'll call again.
Check in again. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
You rock and cover on the heat. Why don't they do what they say?
Mary writes in, Mike, I remember Arlen Specter stating on C-SPAN when the Republicans were in the majority that to have Attorney General Gonzalez appear before Specter's Judiciary Committee, quote, it was not necessary to swear him in, end quote. After all, he was the Attorney General, and an Attorney General never lies, does he? All these Republicans on the Judiciary Committee who are up for re-election in 2008 should be defeated for their unabashed support of these lying administration witnesses. Yeah, I wonder how Arlen Specter felt today when he's sitting there with testimony coming out that the Attorney General he didn't feel was necessary to swear in turns out to be a complete liar. Oh, my God. Thanks to our usual crew of bandits who put the program on tonight. Ian Huff, who is our engineer and co-produced out of Phoenix, also answered your phone calls. Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent. Mark Marshall, our webmaster, and the moderators at MikeMalloy.com. Catherine Bay is the executive producer, of course. And if you haven't been to NovaMRadio.com and signed up for the to become a founding member, please go. Please do it. If you don't like to get your credit card over the Internet, okay, so you can send a check to Nova M Radio at 824 Washington, Phoenix, 85034. 824 Washington, Phoenix, 85034. Just make it out to Nova M and send it in, okay? And I've gotten a couple of requests from people who heard me read tonight what Alicia wrote about the child's Republicans being the child party and Democrats being the parent party. If you want more of Alicia's writing, and she's damn good, go to Last Left Before Hooterville, and the four in there is the numeral four. Last Left, letter B, numeral four, Hooterville. Last Left Before Hooterville, .blogspot.com. Check out her writing because she's good. Last Left Before Hooterville, .blogspot.com. Leonard is calling from Glendale, Arizona. Hey, Leonard, welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you there, Mike. It's an honor to talk to you. I just want to thank you for putting out the word. I mean, you let out a lot of stress for myself and a lot of friends that I talk to. And
good.
You and Jeff Ferries down here in Phoenix, you give the primal scream, and by darn it, they're not going to shut you up, and we got your back down here. And I just want to let you know, wherever you go and wherever Jeff Ferries goes, they better be smart and keep you on at Novam Radio, because I'll follow you and take everybody I know, all my friends. I only have a few, but we'll go where you go. We're loyal listeners because you're the Thomas Paine of the friggin' 21st century.
Oh, my God.
Golly. I just want to thank you, man. We got your back, and I hope we can run into you down here in Phoenix, you know?
Well, I'll be out there on the 15th. When will I be out there, Kathy? On the 15th of April. So I hope you're going to come by the Nova M one-year birthday party. Go to novamradio.com, and you can get information for it.
All righty. Well, hopefully by the time you get here, Gonzo will be out, and hopefully everybody will unanimously be trying to get George Bush out of there also. So anyways, thanks a lot, Mike. We're with you wherever you go, whatever station you go to. I'll freaking tithe my darn check. I mean, they better keep you at Nova M, and they better keep Jeff Ferries, because you guys are what this station's all about. Thanks a lot.
Well, thank you, Leonard. That's very kind. I don't know what to say. Most of you who've listened to this program a long time know that the compliments are wonderful, but I just don't know how to handle compliments. So, but anyway, thanks, Leonard. Maybe we'll see you at the gig in Phoenix. And again, the reason I'm losing my voice, the pollen count here in Atlanta, this has been, I think, I've been here over about 35 years, and the pollen this year is the worst that it's ever been. And it's really affecting an awful lot of people down here. So that's why you hear the scratchy voice. It's not throat cancer or ripped vocal cords or some hideous illness in my throat. It's not that at all. It's simply reaction to the pollen. And it goes away. I mean, this is Atlanta. Atlanta is a gorgeous, gorgeous city. In the spring, and this past fall, it was incredibly beautiful. But we pay for it with incredible bursts of pollen down here. A friend of mine came into town the other day and said he was flying in, and Atlanta, it's too early for the car pollution to take hold. That comes in June and July. But as he was flying in, he said your entire city looks like it's in a cloud of yellow. And it's the pollen, pine pollen and beech and just on and on. So that's what the scratchy voice is. Because I got a couple emails tonight about that. Craig is calling from Fairfax, Oklahoma. Hey, Craig.
Yeah, hi. Doesn't Samson remind you of like a Rove clone? I mean, I was looking at him today, and he looked exactly like Karl Rove, only a bit younger.
Yeah. Oh, there's no question. All these people have an alarming similarity. It's I mentioned tonight, it's like that movie, The Boys from Brazil. It's like they're cloning these people in some basement somewhere.
Uh-huh. Well, what I was really calling about was this Goodling. I'm Native American, and the Abramoff thing, I know for a fact that they put some young lawyer in charge of that over the experienced lawyer that was doing it. Wasn't that Goodling, or was it just somebody like her? Because it was a young 30-ish woman.
I'm not sure. It may have been her. What I do know about her is that she, and I got an email about this tonight, but we had found this out earlier today also. Miss Goodling, the one who has taken the Fifth Amendment in order not to testify, which speaks volumes, is a graduate of Pat Robertson's Regents University. And if you go to their website, he talks about that. The website talks about they have over 100 Regents University graduates embedded, my term, in the Bush crime family, in the Bush administration. So Goodling, who immediately cuts and runs, this great Christian woman apparently who graduated from Pat Robertson's Regent University, refuses to testify. I think there's something in the Ten Commandments about not bearing false witness. So. That might have something to do with it. Craig, I have to leave it there, pal. I hope you call again. Thanks a lot.
All right, thank you.
All right, take care. And thanks for hanging out tonight. However you did that, everybody, I'll see you tomorrow night, Friday night. And we'll have the winner tomorrow night on the name Dana Perino's nickname contest. Take care, all right? Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is NoVam Radio.